to enlarge tuna.
So, I am not standing for violence, but I do stand for self-defense.
All right, take 142. This is Generation X. I'm Eric B. I have my sister Lisa Lewis with me. I said Lisa Lewis. So hi, Lisa Lewis.
Hi, how are you?
And then her friend Keisha Lewis is here with
us.
Where did that even come from, though?
You know, the sad part is I don't even think she'd recognize.
Did she?
I forgot the name. Wait.
I know.
Okay.
She's coming in the room in a minute. Where is Lisa?
Where did Lisa come from?
That sounds good. I'll roll with it.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Hey, Keisha is with us today. Will Sapp, right, what's up, bro? He's back. He earned a day.
Eating these pretzels and chocolate.
I did not realize that's what you were eating when we was talking about that.
Yeah. You ever had? I'm sorry, am I supposed to be eating on TV?
No, but I guess on radio it's cool.
I can't hear you in microphone chewing.
Chewing.
You're doing pretty good.
Yeah. I didn't even know he was eating the chocolate pretzels. And they taste good.
Yeah,
I've never had it. I'm not a big pretzel person. So,
but I don't think anybody's really a pretzel person.
My daughters, wife, they're pretzel people.
Really?
Like they actually go to that pretzel place.
Talk about it.
Oh yeah.
What's it called?
Miss Ann's.
Specialize in pretzels.
Miss Ann's.
Is that what it's called? Where you
in the mall?
In the mall.
That's different though.
Why does it don't seem like it's called Miss Ann's though?
There's two of them. There's one that's Miss Annie's, and then there's another one.
Maybe it is Miss Annie's. Is that blue and yellow?
Mm-hmm. There's another one too, I think.
Like pretzel power or something.
No,
like that.
There's no such thing as
that. Pretzel something.
It sounded good.
Yeah, right. That's all I could come up with.
They really do stop and get those pretzels.
Well, that's different. Them pretzels is different.
They're soft and hot.
It's like bread. It's like bread.
Yeah.
Bread with the pretzel flavor.
They put the hot dogs in the middle inside.
Yeah.
They just shaped like a pretzel.
Yeah, this is terrible. But back in the 80s, I guess this would be the show to say on. My first cigarette was a stick pretzel.
A stick pretzel?
Remember these southern pretzels look like stick? And the grown-ups used to smoke. And so I would grab those
and
stick pretzels
and pretend like
I was smoking. Yeah.
You know,
terrible thing. My first one
was.
Never let your kid pretend to do stick pretzels because it took me a long time to quit smoking after that.
But
yeah.
Once I stopped. My first cigarette was the one with the bubble gum. The little packet.
Yeah.
How you used to blow through it and a little puff of dust would come out. Like
I remember those. Yeah. I remember those.
But I never had a cigarette in my life. And that was just you.
You're right.
Yeah.
My father smoked. I used to mimic,
You mimicked him?
Right.
Did you ever end up smoking?
I did. Okay. But at first for a long time, I resented the fact that he smoked, And back in the 80s, parents were smoking in the car or hot boxing with the kids, and they were smoking in the house, airplanes, but it seemed like maybe 10, 15 years later, I'm a cigarette smoker, and I'm like, how did that happen?
Wow.
I remember being in the 80s. I remember my dad used to smoke a cigarette on the porch. I remember one day walking up to us like, Dad, could you stop smoking? And now that I think about it, I'm like, I'm a little badass kid.
Hey, but you was looking out.
Yeah, right.
He stopped right there.
In front of me. I never saw him smoke again.
No, real spit though. Like, your children will cause you to do that. Mm-hmm. And although I quit before she had to ask me to stop smoking. Mm-hmm. It was like, soon as I had my first one, it was like, oh yeah, I gotta live.
Yeah, I was like 8 or 9.
You know what I'm saying? And it was like, boom.
I was like 8 or 9. He used to always sit on the porch and smoke a cigarette. I remember just walking up to him. And I never seen him smoke a cigarette again. Yeah. I don't know if he did or didn't afterwards, but I never saw
him. He would never do it in front of you.
Yeah. It's the best decision ever made for me personally was to leave that.
I recall
back to the pretzels and smoking those little salt sticks back in the day.
Now, sick of weed? That's from the earth.
Hey. I say nothing about that. Not talking about it. Actually, I don't smoke marijuana either anymore.
It smokes me.
But I never mind when people smoke around me. I'll tell you that. I don't smoke, but I don't mind when people. I don't like cigarette smoke.
I don't like cigarette smoke.
I don't like cigarette smoke anymore. But marijuana doesn't bother me. The smell is always like.
That's different. It is. It calms you down.
Yeah, I remember the calmness of that. But anyway.
I'm more of an edible person.
Are you?
Shout out to EDL, who makes the best gummies in the world.
That's what's up. Shout out to EDL, and I didn't even know you ate edibles.
Yeah, she makes them.
I thought you ate edibles, but I didn't know you ate edibles.
They will put you out.
That went over. You
like, did he?
But, she gonna wake up with Tuesday like, ah!
All right, we got a great show today. We're gonna talk about surveillance cameras, the spread of those. Little talk about disco, and then our film for the day is Footloose. Mm. So keep it locked. We're having some fun, man. It's Generation X. KCBZ.
You Big Brother is definitely watching you by literally watching you through your laptop or phone camera. Did you know that former FBI Director James Comey covers his laptop camera with tape? He also once said that in government offices, the machines come with a little flap that covers the lens of the camera that sits on the monitor. You think he's crazy? Well, Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg covers his webcam with tape too, as well as his audio jack. Zuckerberg fears his laptop camera being hacked, and for good reason. The Intercept reported that the NSA can use a plugin called Gumfish to take over a webcam, while the Wall Street Journal reported in 2013 that the FBI can hack microphones and cameras on devices. But it's probably true that you're never more than 6 feet away from the view of a CCTV camera. The UK is said to be the most heavily surveilled country on Earth regarding CCTV. The country has an estimated 5.9 million cameras, one for every 11 people. London alone has 420,000 cameras, while Beijing has a whopping 400,000 surveillance cameras. American cities follow on the list of most watched over cities, with Chicago, Houston, and New York all having what some might say is an inordinate amount of CCTV cameras.
Would it worry you to know that your every move, your every association was being watched? Does that change something fundamental?
Honestly, there's a certain level of discomfort.
The primary attribute of which was the construction of an enormous tower in the center of the institution, where whoever controlled the institution could at any moment watch any of the inmates, although they couldn't watch all of them at all times. And crucial to this design was that the inmates could not actually see into the panopticon, into the tower, and so they never knew if they were being watched or even when. And what made him so excited about this discovery was that that would mean that the prisoners would have to assume that they were being watched at any given moment, which would be the ultimate enforcer for obedience and compliance. That model could be used not just for prisons, but for every institution that seeks to control human behavior: schools, hospitals, factories, workplaces. And what this mindset, this framework, was the key means of societal control for modern Western societies, which no longer need the overt weapons of tyranny, punishing or imprisoning or killing dissidents, or legally compelling loyalty to a particular party, because mass surveillance creates a prison in the mind. A society in which people can be monitored at all times is a society that breeds conformity and obedience and submission, which is why every tyrant, the most overt to the most subtle, craves that system.
There it is. It's Generation X, KCBZ. I'm Eric B. I'm here with Keisha Lewis and Will Sapp. And we are talking about cameras. Man, they're everywhere. They are.
Absolutely.
Everywhere. Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Like, how do you feel about just the surveillance, just to start off? How do you feel about the amount of surveillance that we experience today?
It's bad.
It's bad?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's multi-layered.
It is.
Because everybody wants their privacy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people gave it away or were okay with it being gone after 9/11 because they felt like we were being attacked. Mm-hmm. And so with the whole, you know, Bush changed the surveillance laws and everybody was okay with it,
right,
getting checked at the airports. And so the freedom that we've enjoyed here is gone. And then now we're just in a whole new reality. It's everywhere. We're stuck in it. It's not going anywhere else, and everybody's okay with it.
Yeah.
That's the sad part.
Everybody's okay with it, or even oblivious, because it's the norm.
Well, it was, right? It was slow steps. Like I said, it started with 9/11, and then everybody was okay. Well, maybe we need to check these people and check phone calls and to people who are calling their family overseas and see who they're talking to just in case.
Yeah, yeah.
When... You know, it's always been the case. FBI has always had the capability of doing that.
Right.
You know, the government's always had the capability.
Yeah.
Because the military is always 10, 25, 30 years ahead of where we are. Because the stuff that they get in the military usually comes to us in the public realm, you know, later after they've used it.
Yeah.
So.
And they use it so frivolously now. Like,
right.
It's not like they're just using it for protection. And not saying that that's good or bad, but I'm just saying.
Because that's how it started. They made it okay, and we're okay with it.
Yeah, we're okay. Like, literally, to be able to think about it, they have the TVs.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually be watching TV, and they can hear you through your smart TVs.
Yeah.
Right.
They can just listen into your home, and then they have the devices. What is it? The Googles and the
artificial intelligence,
mm-hmm. Alexas, mm-hmm. and all those things that we bring into our homes, and they can at a dime just flip those on.
The phone is on all the time.
Your phone, exactly.
All the time.
Your phones. There was an emoji app, so I encourage you to actually check them if you're listening to the show. But on your applications, there are buttons that says all your texting. You're giving those companies permission mm-hmm. to actually utilize and read all your texts.
Right.
When you sign up for these different apps onto your phone.
And I won't even be scary. It's sad because they let you know they're going to be intruding you. That's what I said. We're okay with it.
Yeah. Right. We're okay, but I think we're okay for one part because we've been conditioned. But then the other part because we don't know.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I feel like there are like, When I first heard about that, because I remember when I was talking with somebody and they were saying, hey, that emoji right there, that opens up your keyboard. Because I didn't know before I knew, mm-hmm. right? And then it was like, okay, so I didn't know about that particular element. And then as you tell other people, you realize nobody I knew was knowing about that. Because it's not one of those things that when you sign up, you know, you begin by saying, okay, you just got to read what it says at the beginning. Right. But these apps, that's not something that they put there for you to read. Mm-mm. That's knowing your phone and going in and make you have to assume that this is okay. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, last night I was looking through my phone and I got a notification that there were some potential threats coming from a certain app, right?
Okay.
And so I went into the potential threats. I opened the app up in my settings. I didn't realize that I could take back all of the access that they had. So I knew that some of them had access to everything.
Right.
Your camera, your audio, your contacts. Exactly. They have access to cut your camera on and things like that, right? Yeah. But I didn't know that I could go in and take those abilities back.
Right.
And when I do go to use the app, it'll say, like when I turned it on this morning, it'll say, do you mind if we control this,
right?
And then
right,
I had to physically go in and say yes. And it asked me if it could control something else, and I had to physically go in and say yes. Mm-hmm. But see, all these years I've been downloading apps, I didn't know that I had
the ability to take it back.
No, I didn't realize that until just last night. And I thought, wow, you know, they are probably, good thing I don't do too much business on my phone anyway, right? But they're probably like running through your phone, running through your passwords, running through your anything that's supposed to be safe and secure, it's like it really isn't.
It's
almost like a joke.
And then the phone company, the phone manufacturers themselves, whether it be Apple or Samsung, whoever, they have that access whether you.
Period.
Yeah, whether you give it to them or not. Or your phone companies, they have that access whether you give it to them or not.
You give consent when you purchase it.
Yeah, that's right.
That is your consent.
And have you noticed that you can pull up to a place, a restaurant or something, and then your phone will tell you, how did you like it?
Yeah.
Now, I leave my location off. You know, I'm just not a person that likes that to be on day and night. But then I thought, well, how did Google, they had the nerve to tell me that I just pulled up to this spot and then ask me how I liked it.
Yeah.
I thought that's kind of creepy, right? Because we think we're in control by saying, no, I'm going to turn my location off. And Google is overriding us saying, no, you're here and we want to know how you like it.
Yeah.
So that lets me know that, you know, that little location button doesn't really mean anything. you've located me and you want me to broadcast.
It's like I'm giving you a sense of false control
over
your life,
exactly.
I'm going to make you believe you have these choices.
That you really don't.
And there's different levels to it because you can turn up your location service, but you still have your phone on.
Right.
And so
that's it.
It will sometimes certain apps will say, please enable your location services to enhance the quality of the app. but that's why I say we're okay with it because we like the convenience of having the phone. We like the convenience of when we are getting ready to leave, it knows where we're going. So it's telling us leave now to get to work by this time. Like we get desensitized because we're shocked the first time, but then we like it.
You know, just to tag that, it's not just our phones, though.
No.
You know what I'm saying? It's like literally these CCTV cameras are everywhere.
They're everywhere.
And it's not just the U.S. It's global. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like we heard in the clip, in the U.S. is one of those cameras, one of these CCTV surveillance cameras, one per every eight person.
And you usually see them in the hood.
Right. Mm-hmm. In the UK is one per 11. In China is one per 37. So, like, that's literally for every eight people, every 11 people, there's one of those cameras around. Mm-hmm. And I was watching this experiment that they did in China. And so here's the flip. And you tell me if you think it's good or bad. But in China, they did an experiment where they wanted to see how long it would take for them to find somebody that was just lost in China. Mm. Now, you know the population of China is ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. So the gentleman goes to the wherever the security place, and they're in there, and they know what's going on. And so they set him down in the middle of one of the train stations, and they say, go. And he begins to walk. And he takes off from whatever location he goes to, and he's walking through the population. He walks to another place, and the cameras are just everywhere. They took him 7 minutes. 7 minutes for the authorities to find him and roll up on him. Now, obviously, they didn't tell the authorities, so when they rolled up on him, he was like, hey, you know what I'm saying? They came in hot.
Right.
He was like, hey, you know, and so I'm sure when he went on, I mean, they took him away, and then they settled it out. But 7 minutes to find somebody through face recognition, that reminds me of that show that's out now, or was out, had Taraji in it. Taraji P. Henson was in a show, some surveillance show, where they were actually finding the people through camera surveillance. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
Well, it's crazy. If you Google, if you can throw a picture in Google, and it'll find who that is. Like, you know, you do a name search, type in a name, you can do the same thing with a picture.
Really?
I did not know they started that. Really?
Have you ever watched the show Catfish?
Yeah.
They always do it on there. They'll do a reverse search on the picture, and they'll show up all those different places where that picture showed up.
Get out. They could.
And even on your phone.
That is crazy.
Even on your phone.
So the public has access
when you take
anybody.
When you take a photo, even on your phone, it will recognize who's who.
Yeah, and I know that.
It will group them all together.
Yeah, I do know that.
I didn't know that.
Even when they're like baby pictures to older pictures, like, it will group. It's like, how do you.
But they can't find who murdered Tupac. We didn't have the technology back then.
There was
no iPhone.
That was the technology was there. It was just wasn't public.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever.
And first of all, I saw Tupac get off at Fruitvale Station.
Yeah, I talked to him the other day.
He'd ride down to the.
He could. He's like, don't give him nothing. Don't give him nothing. All right, I got you. But
don't tell nobody. Don't say
nothing. You know what I'm saying? I'm good. No. Anyway, but it's ridiculous. I think it's scary a little bit, in the sense of, and not scary where you walk around fearful, but it's scary in the sense of there's a book, remember, called 1984?
Mm-hmm. Which,
You remember that?
Uh-huh.
Orson Welles.
Which kind of predicts.
Yeah, it kind of talks about being at this point, right?
And that's why I said it's, or even Octavia Butler, her a lot of her books, kind of break down. Was it the Parable of the Sword? Kind of breaks down. I mean, it's pretty much telling everything that's happening, which is kind of my always thought is time isn't linear, and everything kind of not repeats itself, but we go through the same thing. Like, we're very simple creatures, and that's why we're easily, you know, I wouldn't say duped,
entertained.
We're controlled in a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, and so once you figure out what can control you, like even with kids, if they like playing games. You know, if you take the games away, you can control them.
Right.
You know, and like everything is pretty much about control. Relationship about control. The government, everything is about control, how much control I want to give up. And we're just in that period where we've given up all of our control to everything else for the idea of convenience.
So do you think, all right, so now let's look at it from a personal perspective. Mm-hmm. How much would you be willing to give up from your life to gain control back? Or is it even possible to gain any control back?
No, because we value convenience.
That's like, that's what I'm getting at. Is there anything that you would be willing to give up? Like, I remember when we talked about microwaves, and we were like, "Hey, man, we could give a microwave and go to the toaster." Mm-hmm.
I'm done with it.
Done with it, right? Yeah. So it's like, how much now? I've personally been done with it, but it's been harder to shake my family of it.
And
you have to actually
get rid of the microwave. And so would you give up your phone? The answer is no.
I feel like if I give up the microwave, if I take the microwave up the house, now I have to consider, am I giving up my family?
Yeah.
Because they're like,
Dad, you're being a jerk.
Yeah, you know, you're taking the microwave. I'm like, golly, man, don't you see?
No, but if you started cooking in the oven.
I do. And they do, but giving up the microwave is like, but what about noodles? I mean, it's a stove, you know what I'm saying? Right there.
Heat up the water.
I don't think it's comparable because of how massive the phone is. Like mm-hmm. I said, people, there are trillion-dollar companies because of this phone.
Yeah.
There would be no Amazon. There would be no Facebook. These companies wouldn't be around without this phone.
Yeah.
And you talk about Facebook as the largest company in the world.
Yeah.
And so.
Bigger than Amazon now?
There's a lot of users. Yeah. I know. Amazon's more valuable.
Okay, so in terms of just users, we're looking at Facebook is the biggest user.
Amazon
might be more valuable. Got you.
Facebook is basically its own country, but Amazon is more valuable.
Right. I got you.
But that's
based on phones too.
Yeah. None of these will exist based off of phones.
Yeah. Phones and computers.
And look at how many industries this phone has destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, bookstores have closed. Record stores have closed.
Hey. It destroyed our whole industry.
That's it changed. It flipped the industry.
Yeah.
And it put the thing is, it's given us power and it's taken away power.
That's huge. I want to come right back on that. Because that's.
Just make that up.
No, but it's true.
It is.
It's true. And that's actually a point I wanted to talk about. So we'll come back so we can spend some time on it. Mm-hmm. Keep it locked. It's Generation X.
You know, I was wondering if you could keep on, because the force, it's got a lot of power, and it makes me feel like it makes me feel like we
Michael Jackson, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough.
Yeah.
Keep on with the false. It's Generation X. We're talking about cameras everywhere.
Everywhere.
And just how they just control, how they just can surveillance you anywhere in your homes. You can be monitored walking down the street. You can be monitored in your car, and it's like there's no escaping being monitored, and it's not just the U.S., it's globally. There's no privacy. Mm-hmm. Privacy is gone, and we were talking about the phones as part of the issue, or a major part of the issue, but there's also this element of it's not just the phone.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because even if we got rid of the phones, you could still be surveillanced. It's our televisions, it's our laptops, it's our just being in the middle of the street, right? The cameras is flashing every time you drive down the street.
But those are all kind of byproducts of the phone, because the smartphone kind of introduced all that. The smart TV.
I actually agree with you more when you go back to like the military has always been using.
Oh, yeah, it's the technology. So, the internet has been around since the 40s and 50s.
Yeah. But I do believe that one of the points that you were making is that we have, there's so much power that we received mm-hmm. by having these devices, mm-hmm. right? It's changed your ability to pursue your own business. It's changed your ability to release your product to the public or mm-hmm. to be more vocal or to allow you to do things that you couldn't do before. But in the sense of it's allowed you this power, it's also decreased our power.
Mm-hmm.
By allowing them to have control
right.
over us. You know what I mean? And so is there a balance? Is there something that could take place to begin to keep the power in the people's hand, but then kind of take back some of the power that we've given to governments?
I think it's a mentality. Honestly, I think you have got to change the way that you think and the way that you perceive what's happening. Mm-hmm. With all their surveillance and, you know, the eye in the sky and being watched mm-hmm. because some of the people who I work with are a little more unplugged, the population I work with. Right. So they don't really have as much to lose as we may think we have to lose, right? So they don't really trip on the fact that there's cameras. They can truly see them,
right?
You know, and then it just so happens that when they're caught in the act, you know, something weird happens, like the cameras aren't recording or, you know what I'm saying? And but it doesn't faze them.
Right.
There's no connection between the fact that you could go to jail and your family could just be out in the streets again.
Right.
They're not as worried about it.
Right.
You know, and maybe because they're coming from the mentality that, I don't have as much to lose or to live for, you know, mm-hmm. or as many things on the line.
Yeah.
So damn what those cameras are looking at.
Right.
You know, I don't care what they catch me doing.
Right.
And then, so the consequences don't mean as much. So I think that mentally we've been groomed, a lot of us, through, you know, just trying to raise our families, want to live in good neighborhoods, you know, just want to have the best of both worlds. We've been groomed or been grooming ourselves to think that things matter that don't really or probably shouldn't matter as much to us, i.e. the smartphones and the fancy cars and the, you know, shopping at Whole Foods as opposed to Foods Co. And it's kind of like, to me, in a sense, we're kind of taking ourselves too seriously. You know, the smartphones, if we're without it, we feel like our lives, you know, we're doomed.
Right.
You know, so I think we've just, we've kind of done it to ourselves, becoming so dependent on these things and caring so much about what if we're caught, when it's not like we're committing crimes. We haven't done any murder.
Right.
You know, we haven't harmed anyone or killed anyone. But you go to the other side of that spectrum and you see others that are like, that stuff matters way too much to you guys on the other side of the fence.
On the other side.
Right.
Right.
You know?
But that's just kind of speaking to ignorance is bliss. If you don't know, you don't know.
Okay.
But I think all eyes are controlling the eyes, meaning we've given up a lot to have a lot of eyes on us, but the I myself has no power. Because we allowed everybody, we've opened the door. Everybody's opened the door to allow to be looked at, judged, all for the sense of trying to find validity or self-worth. And it gives everybody a sense, ability to kind of reach out, because it's an attention thing, you know. So people like the attention aspect of it.
Right.
And so because you have a whole generation that's now come up with a cell phone, it's part of their lives as extension. Mm-hmm. And so their validation comes from this phone. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people. And like I was saying, there are people that are making seven figures because of Instagram. Mm-hmm. You know, just because of taking pictures of themselves. And so it's not, I don't think there'll ever be a point where we would give that up. But like you were saying, there are some people that are oblivious to it because they don't sit in that world.
And you know what? I don't think it just speaks to ignorance is bliss. I think it speaks to ignorance is bliss. And the reason I say I'm throwing that in, because that just almost makes it like, that it's okay, and it's not okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not okay to be ignorant to what's happening, even though it is blissful. Mm-hmm. To not be concerned with it. Like, there's times that I've had conversations with even my mother, and we'll talk about what's going on, and she'll say, you know what, that's why I don't want to know all that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Not right.
Like, I don't even want to know all that, because it's like, I just rather live until I die.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
My mom does that too. And I, yeah. Sometimes I sit there and I say, nope, you gonna know.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you need to know, not to draw in any negativity, but my dad always told me to kind of be aware of everything around you.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to know what's going on.
Yeah, you got to know what's going on without losing joy for life.
Yeah.
Yes. Hey, but our elders, right, people that have been here for a long time, like grandmother's 83, she knows what's going on.
Yeah,
right?
That's what I said. A lot of people
without
do.
Watching.
Mm-hmm.
She knows that the world is taking a turn for the mm-hmm. worse without someone telling her that Donald Trump is acting a fool every day in the media. You don't. And to
that's
me, I stay unplugged from the media a lot. Not all the way. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, just living through life day to day as mm-hmm. a single Black woman who's divorced with no dependents to claim on her taxes and no
off.
Formal education.
No, show no.
So I got to hustle a little bit harder, right? Yeah. So when I'm in the midst of my hustling, I can't listen to that every day.
Yeah.
I can't. It's gonna take my mind and put me in that's a right. whole nother position to where I'm angry and I'm mad and I'm more racist with people
right.
and I'm less tolerant.
Right.
So in order for me to stay grounded, I have to stay away from a little bit of what's going on.
Yeah.
Because you look at, I have friends that watch CNN and Fox News all day.
Right, yes.
All day.
Yeah.
And they're pissed off. They don't have enough sleep. They always want to talk politics in the wrong settings.
Yeah.
And I just think you can go too far with the knowledge.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's good to not know. I just tell my friends, you know, I take a little bit of it in, but I don't need to know that the world is going crazy right now by watching CNN.
Right.
I know it already.
That's right.
I made it 40 years and I can see where it's trending.
Yeah.
No, don't get me wrong. I want to stay on top of what's happening. Mm-hmm. But too much of it can then turn me into somebody who I'm not.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Yeah, no, that's
you know, and bad. I think some people do take it too far and it does affect them. They don't see how it affects them on the surface.
Uh-huh.
Right? Until they go to somebody else who's not as plugged in to the matrix, somebody who has unplugged and said, "Hey man, you know, this is, I don't even know why you tripping like that. This has nothing to do with you. I mean, it's not gonna affect us having lunch right now, is it?"
Right.
But it can possibly. Because people feel so passionate about things that don't really matter. And the things that do matter, I think sometimes attention is taken away from them.
Mm-hmm. I, you know what, to speak to what you said, I think that balance is so important, because I think as you used the phrase, you said unplugged from the matrix. And I think that's exactly what, just to be transparent to for us as a people, and for, I mean, just for humans in general.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that there has to be a balance to where you can unplug from the matrix, but you have to know what the matrix is doing.
Right.
And the reason is, and I'm saying that I think is more, I come from the space of a father and knowing that whether I'm plugged in or not, my children are going to have to come up in it.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And right now, the plug, and I'm glad you said Matrix, because remember that Matrix, that movie in itself shows you how like everybody was living, you know, you tapped into this virtual world and then there was this external world, right?
Right.
And this technology is actually making it where everyone, you don't have a choice but to be plugged in.
Right.
And so Generation X, I believe we come from an era, like we talk about often, that balance between the boomers and the millennials, where the boomers were unplugged, the millennials are plugged, and we are plugged in and know how to unplug
at the same time.
Right. But if we're not aware of the matrix itself, our future will begin to not know how to unplug.
Right.
So I think it's important that we maintain the ability to unplug, but continue to know what's going on so we can teach them what's a plug and what's not a plug.
Like, right.
Because there's this point where in our future, they won't even know that there is an option to unplug because they won't know that they're plugged in. They won't know that they're plugged in.
They don't know the plug exists.
They won't even know it exists.
Well, not only that, when you said that the boomers and the millennials.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a natural state of kind of how our role is. I know a lot of things about, I know a little bit about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of pride myself in it. Like, I know I can have a conversation about everything that's going on, but at the same time, none of it affects me to the point where I'm going to be like, oh no, what are we going to do? It's like, okay, this is the situation. This is how these people are acting. This is how I'm going to act based off of that. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to make sense about what I do. And I'm going to base myself off in facts. Because a lot of times, like you said, people watch CNN or Fox or whatever, they don't understand that that's entertainment. And I mm-hmm. think us coming up understand that we saw the period of when there was real news, and now that is strictly entertainment, mm-hmm. and that there's a difference. And the people that are growing up now don't understand that that's entertainment and not necessarily news.
Mm-hmm.
And information doesn't necessarily mean truth.
Right.
It just means information.
Mm-hmm.
And people now don't know how to research either. They don't know
how
to look stuff up.
They don't want to.
They don't know how. Mm-hmm. It's not even not want to. They think researching is Googling something.
Or Wikipedia, right?
Yeah, well, let me Google that. Mm-hmm. That's how they research. But they're not taking it in. And so because they're not taking it in, it goes in one ear and out the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's no nutrients with it. So everything that they're taking in is like McDonald's. Mm-hmm. You know, it's bad for you, and then your body flushes it out as quickly as it comes in because mm-hmm. your body knows it's bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not understanding the information that they're taking in. And I think, like, I feel like I have to know what's going on all the time. I step back from things when I'm by myself,
mm-hmm.
but when I'm with people, it's like I feel like, no, this is what's going on. This is what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Are you not paying attention? And because I do hear a lot of people saying, why does it matter that we pay attention? You know, to simple stuff like, why do we need to vote? Why do we need to be involved? The stuff that doesn't bother me until something bothers them or comes across their desk, and all of a sudden people want to pay attention. And that's what I always try to stop from people, waiting till something catastrophic happens for you to start paying attention.
That's mm-hmm. true.
Because that's the only time people start actually, oh, how did this happen?
Yeah.
And what people don't realize is, like you're saying with your grandmother saying, oh, I know it's, every generation has gone through that of, oh, this generation is just so out of whack. This is the worst generation ever.
Mm-hmm.
So why are people always saying that when they get older? Why is that? Why is that a constant theme with every generation?
Mm-hmm.
This generation is going to crap.
Mm-hmm.
This rock and roll music, this whatever, this hip hop music. It's always the same thing.
I believe it's continual, though. I don't necessarily think it's I do believe that each one is going to more crap than the previous.
But who's deciding what's crap is what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying? So,
I believe who decided what's crap is when we can say that we see things happening that disturb us. Mm-hmm. And then we see more things happening that disturb us. I think that term of what going to crap is when you have this majority of the people agreeing that there's this, that things are not getting better. So, like, for example, we're talking about camera surveillance. Mm-hmm. And being in a position where you can't walk down the street, you can't sit in your car, you can't be in your home without knowing. Now, you don't have to be fearful, but without knowing that at any time, you don't have your own privacy. And so, to me, coming from a space where there was a time where there was privacy, to go into a time where there is no privacy is going to crap. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? And so that's that for this generation, for my generation, it's like, here's my definition of going to crap. Mm-hmm. Here's an example of going to crap. Right. There was a time where I could sit in my room and watch TV and not think somebody was watching me back or listening to what was happening in my room. Mm-hmm. And now there's a time where I'm watching TV and I'm knowing at any moment they can access my inside of my home. Or even as we sit here with these computers, there was a time where we would have reel to reels mm-hmm. and do these things. And we knew that we were in a secure zone. But now it's like, now your security is causing you to be unsecure.
And now the generation that's coming now is wanting that lack of security.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. But that's what I'm getting at. That's why. But here's the thing. I think it's not crap because they don't know.
Yeah.
Well, right? They didn't experience
that. So that's what I'm saying. So to them, it doesn't make sense that it's crap.
But it's not them that's doing it.
But here's the thing. They invite people to come into their lives.
Because they don't.
I believe
that's how that going to crap continues.
Yes.
Right? Because I believe, because there's this other experience, like I say, there's this balance where, okay, now there's more freedom mm-hmm. to be able to do the things you want to do than there was before. Right.
Right.
Right. You can do certain things that you couldn't do before, but there's also this balance of, as I'm gaining more freedom to be able to do things that I want to do, I'm giving up freedoms.
Well, remember when television programming actually ended?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When the television was done.
And they used to play the Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it was off.
They go to the black and white ants fighting.
Right. Because there was a certain time we as a people thought it was, you had enough television for the day. Mm-hmm. There's no need for you to have that much television where mm-hmm. you watch the day and night, night and day. Right?
Exactly.
I don't even think it was that though.
Well, I think it was. I think they wanted to have more control over something they saw that wasn't necessary. You know, television programs were like a luxury. Right. Mm-hmm. Everyone didn't have a television in their home and they didn't feel they felt like they wanted to watch television, but it wasn't something that should go on day and night.
Right.
It was something that was controlled. Yeah. They were considerate about the fact that the children had to go to school in the morning. Their parents usually had to go to work. The structure of the home was a lot different. And I think that we considered that
the norm.
Right.
The norm.
So for us to be able to say we know what has changed because we've come from that era, or our parents came from that era, and it just, the families were more together and more.
That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
In the sense of, like, our children, or the new generation, at some point they will experience a shift as well.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And they will know certain things from our generation, from their generation, and then they'll see the next generation, mm-hmm. and once again, like you say, Will, that theme of it's going to crap will come up again.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Because they'll see that there are more freedoms, there are more things that are existing than even for them. You know what I mean? And I feel like it's this switch where if you take us all the way back to times of slavery, right, we've gained freedoms that's put us back into a different type of slavery. Right, it's these freedoms that's also put us back in this surveillance generation. Like I remember when what's the Mavericks owner?
Mark Cuban.
Mark Cuban was on Shark Tank, and he said, "I'm just interested in surveillance." Right, I'm interested in collecting data, surveillance information. So if you came into Shark Tank and you wanted to deal from him, there was something that you had to bring. You know, that's what his interest was. Of course, he would show generosity to different things, but that's what his interest is. What you're dealing with, surveillance.
He knew how big it was going to get.
He knew where.
Well, it's all about money, because you were saying they were considerate of the shows went up. I don't think they were being considerate. They realized there's 24 hours in a day, and we can make a dollar on every hour that's coming across. And so we need TVs only to sell advertisement. That's its purpose.
That's the purpose of the company that's providing.
That's providing, yeah.
Right. So because we always got to think of everything has more than one purpose. Like there's the TV is doing it to be able to make. I mean, even if we look at our platform here.
Mm-hmm.
So KCBZ is doing it for an income stream, right? We're not doing it necessarily for the income stream. Well, we're doing it for the information.
Not the people
purpose.
That are creating
right.
the content.
Right. So, yeah, I'm just saying there's always, just in the phrasing of it, just making sure that we, you know, I know you understand.
Like,
just making sure we.
Well, like magazines, mm-hmm. you know, people go like, I'm going to buy this magazine. But it's really, they're trying to sell ads. That's mm-hmm. that's the goal, is to sell ads.
Exactly.
And the TV is to sell ads. So how can we get more ads? We need more money to pay these people that are coming in. Mm-hmm. We need more money. We need to expand. So we need to merge with this person because they have access to these people. And we need to sell more ads. Mm-hmm. So this is our range of consumers, 18 to 34. We need they like this, so I'm gonna put more of this on TV and more of that on TV. If it's on all the time, that gives us opportunity to show it to more eyes.
Right.
And so it's not, I don't think a consideration. I just think they just realize we can make more money during this time. And so it's all about how can we gain an access to dollar? How can we get more dollars? How can we get more? You know, revenue streams coming through.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people that are in that mindset aren't thinking about the well-being of people.
But the people in that mindset right. are thinking about creating devices that will allow you to lose your freedoms so they can make more money as
yeah.
well, though. You know
well, just
what I'm
saying? Like when Les mm-hmm. Moonves, mm-hmm. The president of CBS, said, I don't care what Trump is good for business. Like,
yeah.
I don't care that he's going to destroy the country.
Yeah.
He's good for business. Just like CNN. They made the whole Trump and Hillary a race, made it something they were close to increase the numbers of people that were going to watch it, because everybody just assumed Hillary's going to win. So let's prop up Trump and give him more time for free time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to get more eyes. It wasn't about these two. They weren't looking at it honestly. They were like, how can we maximize the dollar? So let's create more stories. Every time Trump is on TV, let's make sure he's on TV, because we know Hillary's going to win. Hillary's going to win. So we're not going
to
focus on.
To tag on that, just to throw in, because it goes back to like when Keisha was talking about when TV would cut off.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. TV not cutting off causes us to keep our TVs on.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Causing us to keep our cameras on.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And our eyes
our
open.
Homes,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? To cause us to allow them to have access to our homes and to our personal space 24/7. You know
and then
what I'm
look
saying?
At what it does to the family in the long run. You
yeah.
know, we're not spending as much time together.
Yeah.
People aren't playing board games with their children
right.
As much. They're not going to the park and letting the kids play for hours.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know, and if they are letting them play for hours, you know, they're on their Facebook. They're mm-hmm. all, they're on their Instagram. They're checking things out. You can see the quality of the family has definitely been diminished
mm-hmm.
from all this technology, all these cameras and things like that.
Yeah.
All these distractions.
Mm-hmm.
That
but
we have
that didn't
electronically.
Start with, that didn't start with the technology, because you look at that. I think that started with both parents having to go work.
Yeah, but it's definitely taking it into a new direction, because both parents having to go to work is one thing, but your parent coming home to spend 3-4 hours on their cell phone when they could be spending time with that child,
right, right.
that has added a new dynamic into it. I see it all the time. Young people, the children are sitting right next to them, and they're so involved in their phone, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then and it's hard for them to not be involved with it, you know,
because yeah.
they've gotten so deep. They're deep into it, right?
Yeah.
And then someone who comes around that's not too much into the phone, the children, they go to that person like no other, because that person has time to talk with them,
yeah.
and they're not on their phones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And yeah. they can give them a little bit of attention, whereas the parents could give them attention too. Yeah. But that phone has got them locked in on the Facebook and the Instagram and the.
Well, and that's why I was saying it's people look at a phone and think of phone. It's not a phone. You know what I'm saying?
It's a computer.
It's a computer.
Right.
And so what it does is give you access to work 24/7. So it's not just like I hear what you're saying, but because people have to work to survive, people are working and trying to find different ways of income.
Right.
And so it's allowed that access, but like you're saying, it's pulling away from social time because you're trying to create income. That's why when I was mentioning both people have to work.
Mm-hmm.
Like you used to have a stay at home parent. Like they say the monthly income for households, you know, is pretty much the same as the 70s. The difference is there was just usually one person working. Now you have two people that are working.
Mm-hmm.
So you had, you know, a father or mother working full time, but you also had a parent at home that was making sure the kids were getting to school, making sure the kids had food.
Mm-hmm.
And you had, you know, said so my dad was always working. My mom was always working. So that's the difference. Now you have both parents that are working. And not only are they working at 9 to 5, they're on BART. And they're working,
mm-hmm.
they're at home and they're working because people are always having emergencies, you know. So you're working 24/7 because of the technology now.
Mm-hmm.
It's so crazy, and it's just crazy. What's crazy to me is when you go back to scripture, it's all written
mm-hmm.
that this would happen, and it's, you know. It's mind-boggling how easy it is for so many to dismiss scriptures when they're living in what's written currently. You know what I'm saying? And you know, I'm not trying to sway it to that,
mm-hmm.
but it's just mind-boggling as we see. It's so intricate in how all these things work together, because, mind you, all the different rays and spectrums of the conversation that we've had, from families not being able to spend time together to technology consuming so much of our time, all the way to people being able to do their work on these devices, to the cameras. All of these things allow ourselves to be more and more tracked. All of these things put us more and more inside of a prison system.
Mm-hmm.
With the constructs of allowing us to think we're independent. You know what I'm saying? We're in this structure of, it's allowing us more freedoms. It's allowing us to be able to do this. But as we do that, and it's designed so beautifully. It's designed so beautifully. But it allows us to believe that we're more free as we imprison ourselves more to a system and a structure that is designed to keep us moving a certain way. However, it's been so articulately designed that we feel free.
Or in control.
Or right? in control,
yeah.
But we're not.
Mm-mm.
You know what I'm saying? But we're not. And we buy more and more into it. And for time, I mean, for me, if y'all don't mind, I want to bring this topic back, like, really quick, because way past our time for it today, and I want to keep, but it's so much to go on, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So I'm going to ask if we can pin this conversation and come back to it.
Yeah, because all my chocolate and pretzels is gone.
Yeah, we're going to take us a musical break. Let's get into we're going to take a short musical break today. Get into a little Gloria Gaynor, and we'll be right back with disco, man. It's crazy. Generation X.
Won't you the one who tried to hurt me with the vibe? Just got drunk. It was the scene and the sound that defined a decade.
It was probably, in my humble opinion, the most liberated period in the history of the world.
The music just pumped your soul.
When I think of disco, I think of it's just one big party.
Music just pulsating and just pounding.
Music that moves me to want to dance.
What images come to my mind when I think of disco?
Platform shoes.
Lots of eye makeup.
Silk and satin shirts opened up.
Bell-bottom pants.
A lot of drugs. Cocaine.
Cocaine. I don't know. Was there drugs around then?
It was sort of the celebratory decade. The Vietnam War ended. We were making forward movement in the civil rights campaign, the women's movement, the gay movement.
They needed somewhere to go and just not think about anything and just be happy and have fun and release.
Disco basically started in New York, spread to Miami, Chicago, San Francisco. It's mainly the big cities.
It was a party every weekend. Everybody started gravitating to the music, the style of the clothes, the dancing.
People just loved it. They couldn't have enough of it.
Hold up. Wait a minute.
Most rock and rollers that I knew had a real problem with disco.
And I hate disco. I really hate it.
I just remember disco and hating it so much.
When it got to the 70s, ourselves, the Earth, Wind & Fire, some of the other Sly and Family Stone had music where you can dance and it was still rock and roll. And as the funk bands started coming out, they really started dancing. The companies tried to isolate the part of the record that made it dance. So your first notion is that it's a drum beat. The mistake is that it's no one drum beat. When they start isolating to one drum beat, don't nothing get on your nerve more than some rhythmic that's the same thing over and over again. I mean, it's like making love with one stroke. You know, so tell you the facts that in.
And the machine age sort of took its revenge, I think, on music, and disco music became the antithesis of what music used to be. The music, instead of being a voice, became an accompaniment. It was almost the anthem of alienation. Halls were full of people who were mindlessly dancing to a rhythm that was basically a machine.
Y-M-C-A. Yes, yes, you got it locked to Generation X. Hey. Disco, man, that disco era. Oh, man.
What about it?
Straight up, man. As you can see, there's pros and there's pros and cons, I guess, to that era. But there are a lot of people that think that was one of the best eras.
Can we be real, though?
And there was a lot of people that think that it was one of the worst eras.
Yeah.
And so I know where I stand. But we can be real. And where do you stand on disco? Was it the best thing that ever happened?
Can we be
real? Or did it catch a bad rap?
Can we be real?
What's happening? Be real.
People started hating it when white folks started coming and messed it up.
People started hating it
as soon as white folks came and messed it up.
You say people started hating it when white folks came and messed it up. All right. Talk to me. What you got?
What say you?
I think disco music brought a lot of people together.
You about to stop crunching that pretzel bag over there or whatever. You
just pistachio.
What is he eating now?
Right.
Well, I'm just trying to create ambiance.
You're over there trying to make some disco background noise. Like
he's over there producing a song as right. We sit here and talk.
Who was that one quote that said that when they isolated the drum kit? Who said that? Because that kind of speaks on what's always been in my head.
Go for
when
it.
When they just isolated that, four on the floor.
And the one. Uh-huh.
Then the four on the floor with the octave bass. Dun, 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 uh-huh. dun, that kind of uh-huh. created sound, but it's bigger than that.
Yeah.
And I was actually reading an article talking about how Saturday Night Fever kind of whitewashed disco pretty much.
Mm, okay.
Because they created, I guess the guy that wrote the movie for it was from Europe. He came over here and went to a club one time and kind of made the movie off of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so people kind of grew on that. Oh, this is what disco is.
Yeah.
It was more expansive than that.
Uh-huh.
And so that's why I said they kind of came in and whitewashed it.
Okay.
You know, so it was more of like an underground scene,
uh-huh.
underground. And to me, I've always looked at disco as dance. It's still around. It's like mm-hmm. dance and house. It revolutionized. Is that a word?
Revolutionized.
It became what house music was.
Okay,
and
I got
what
you.
Dance music is.
It evolved.
It evolved. That's the word I was looking at. Okay. Evolutionized. Mm-hmm. I just created it, if it ain't a word.
Okay, I like it.
It works.
You know, so that it's just dance music. You know, it's four on the floor. It's up tempo, and so when you look at house, you look at dance music now. That's where we are now. That's what disco kind of created that. Mm-hmm. There really wasn't a lot of dance music before the 70s, before disco. You know, there was dance, but like it was like sock hop and big swing. But as far as like a straight culture of underground dance scenes,
yeah, no, I mean,
and dance
I'm
gonna clubs.
Disagree with you there. But before I go, I want to give Keisha, what you about to say? Mm-hmm. Something?
Yeah, I think that disco brought a lot of people together.
Okay,
from a lot of different genres, a lot of different races.
Right.
I definitely compare it to house music, one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. It definitely reminds me of that. Maybe the era is what gave it a bad rap, you know, because so many people were thumping the Bible and saying you guys were heathens for listening to it. And that's happened, you know, since the beginning of time, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it was a good thing. I don't think it was so horrible. I think it got a bad rap just because of the time that the era it came out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it got a lot of people... partying together,
yeah.
That were just from different backgrounds.
Yeah, I agree totally that it definitely was a time a music that brought people together, especially that big party scene that was happening. Right, I believe that to go back to what Will was saying as far as dance music prior to disco, there was a lot of dance music. It was just bands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and a lot of the people when we listened to the clip, a lot of the people that was actually George Clinton. That actually had one of the people that was talking about his issue with disco.
Mm-hmm.
But you had the funk bands were rocking, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that was the dance music of the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then as that drum machine came in, and the thing about it is a lot of the funk bands were able to merge into that disco because
incorporated.
Yeah, it was incorporated, but they didn't want to.
Right, no, they didn't.
They didn't want to make that shift because it was mm-hmm. like, it's taking away their control and their freedom mm-hmm. because disco became something, like you said, something that became more controlled. But it didn't start that way.
No.
Yeah,
you know, it started with a lot more strings and a lot more movement, you know what I'm saying, inside of it.
I'm not, you know, that hip on the time, but mm-hmm. Was it called disco at the time? Like, was it called disco, like...
During the disco era?
During the disco era, for
them. Yeah, I mean, even the songs were coming out using the term disco in the records, you know what I'm saying? They transitioned, even in the early part, as they transitioned into it, they would use mm-hmm. that term. And the reason is...
Which is discotheque, which is like...
Right, exactly, yeah. Because you got to remember, like, one of the things that disco did is it took the power from... the radios almost
mm-hmm.
and gave it back to the DJ.
DJs.
Right.
Yes, and so that's exactly
or
what
gave
it was
it to
about.
The DJs.
It gave it to the DJs.
Yeah,
because if you wanted a record broken, because at that time the radio stations were only, the jocks were still playing band music.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to break that club scene, you had to get it into a DJ's hand in a discotheque. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? So that's what it was about really early on. It was about taking it to the club and taking it out of the quote unquote authorities' hands of who was going to break a record,
right?
And allow the people to decide, is this hot or not?
Mm-hmm.
So the DJs would play it, and then a lot of those DJs eventually became the radio DJs because they had to pulse mm-hmm. to the people, and that's how a lot of us that are DJs now mm-hmm. got to be back and forth into club DJs and radio DJs because it was like you had to pulse to the people, and
right.
So then you would go back to the station. So. Mm-hmm. But I do think it was, I think it's one of the best eras.
Me too.
Yeah.
I have to agree with you on that.
I think it's one of the best eras. And I know it gets slammed a lot, but I think the music, like you say, it brought people together.
Mm-hmm.
But music usually does, though.
Yeah, but I believe before disco, the music was really targeted towards your particular
yeah.
still a lot
genre.
Of separation.
It was more, yeah.
Still a lot
yeah.
of separation.
But in this place right here, it was like everybody.
It was all the outcasts.
Everybody parties.
All the outcasts.
Right.
And our only focus is we're going to have fun.
You said the outcasts. That makes me think about the Stonewall riots
mm-hmm.
in 1969. And it was actually the the mob.
They went after the Puerto Rican. Was it the Puerto Rican? Was it the Puerto Rican homosexuals in that area?
Yeah. So yeah, what it was the Italian mob had created a. Well, prior to this, you couldn't dance with someone of the same sex even on the dance floor. Mm-hmm. It was illegal. Mm-hmm. So the mob would actually create these club scenes where the homosexuals would be able to come in and dance and do their party, and that would be the music they would play, and they would kind of keep the cops away so they can go in and party, and then they would overcharge them.
Wow.
You know, drink prices and stuff. So, of course, you know, they're going to make their money. It wasn't because they agreed with it. It was a moneymaker.
It was like the Underground Railroad for the homosexuals?
Yeah, kind of. You know what I'm saying? To kind of go in and party.
And have, thing, yeah.
Right? And so then in 69... one of the riots broke out, and the police stormed the place, and then they ended up getting trapped on the inside. The gays were on the outside. They began to burn down the building, and then this big riot broke out, and that's when it was like, you know, we out, we here, we making some noise, and that's what the gay pride parade is celebrating every year.
Wow.
It's that Stonewall riot. But, I believe it also was a time period of speaking up. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because it wasn't just the gays that were speaking up during that time.
That's
you know
fine.
What I'm saying? Women's rights movement mm-hmm. was kicking off. Racial equality. It was just a time period where everybody was just like...
Well, people started paying like, wait a minute. I want these rights.
I want these rights.
That you guys are talking about.
Yeah, like
I
all
can't
these
get
rights
them.
Is really happening during this time period.
Without like, having to conform.
Yeah, we need a disco era right now.
I want to be myself.
Right.
Yeah, I want to be myself. And it spoke volumes, you know, across the board. You know what I mean? So
it's funny because I guess when I think disco, I think 70s.
Okay.
But I also think like there's a lot of people. I guess it's like you think of like a few artists that are like disco artists.
Uh-huh.
But I also think that to me, a lot of times when I hear certain songs and I don't think disco necessarily. Like when you're playing Michael Jackson, like I'm not thinking that's disco.
I'm thinking that's
soul R&B.
Yeah.
You know that or funk.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of times people say disco, I'm thinking that's funk.
Yeah.
Like GQ or somebody like that that's playing, even though the song's called Disco Nights, to me that's a funk song.
Yeah.
You know, so like what's making it disco?
Yeah, that goes back to that conversation we had a while ago. It might have been over a year now when we talked about just the count.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And really bringing it back to everything landing on the one, but taking out the full one, two, three, four, and just bringing it back to the one, one, and allowing that to really hit. All the way through, and that's kind of like the main basis.
Yeah, having that four on the floor and just, which is that's why I said it's kind of like the grandfather to house a lot of like electronic music.
It's
four on the floor. It's doom 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 doom. Yeah, you know, and then what you're doing differently in disco is you're having that octave bass. Doom 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 doom. You know, you throw that in there, now it's a disco song.
Yeah,
right.
You know,
yep.
You play it straight, it's not a disco song. You know.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, and I feel like it kind of like I do agree. I won't necessarily say it's when white people got involved. there are a lot of times where I do say. Things went down because white people got involved. I know I've said that a million
times.
There's
a reason why I say that, though.
But I'm not saying that for disco personally, but I do agree that there was a time period where, just like any genre, it begins to get washed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
It begins to get washed. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because
especially genres we create.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say any genre that gains a big popularity.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, when it becomes something, kind of like what we were talking about in the last topic, when it becomes something everybody can get involved in, it can become washed.
Stale.
Mm-hmm.
It can become stale. It becomes watered down, right? Mm-hmm. So when you have funk bands and things, everybody didn't play instruments, so everybody wasn't making music.
Right.
But everybody could pick up a drum machine, and you know, a lot more people could get involved with that process.
Right.
And so the same thing happened to anything that the more people get involved in it, the more washed it can get, I think, you know.
Well, think about when they had the whole disco died with the Chicago White Sox game. They had
McKinney. What was it?
I don't know the DJ's name.
I do.
But he got fired from a station that was
Steve Dahl.
He was a radio DJ.
Steve Dahl.
That worked on a station on a rock format, and they switched the format to disco.
Yeah.
So he got let go. Yeah. So he was pissed off.
Yeah.
So they had Bring Your Records to the Chicago White Sox game and Destroy Your Disco Records.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that was part of the promotion of the game.
Yeah.
And so he spearheaded that because he got fired from a station that took over disco.
Yeah.
And all these rock bands that came up hated disco.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I said white folks got involved. Because it wasn't them necessarily with the music. It was them with the hatred of the music.
Yeah.
Because they decided... This is no good. It's crap,
right?
You know,
it took a lot of the people that were enjoying it
didn't think it was crap.
Right.
Well, you know what? But then at the same time, and I get what you're saying. That was Kaminsky Park, Steve Dahl. But it wasn't just white folks that hated music. I believe that was Steve Dahl thing turned in from jockey disliking a certain music to people discriminating against a certain race.
Exactly.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Because
and using rock
when it came to the disliking the music, it wasn't just white folks. The funk bands and the black folk bands really hated it.
Right.
Because it was putting them out of work.
That's what I was thinking.
You know what I'm saying?
And a lot of people weren't willing to evolve.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't want to. Though, this is stupid. What are we going to do now?
Yeah.
This has been this way for so long. Why do we have to change what we like to do?
Yeah.
You know, to be relevant.
Or even that.
Because that Steve Dahl incident was really about those that were against homosexuality and those that were against the gays really rioting against the gays. You know what I'm saying?
And they
use disco as a target.
Right. Instead of saying the music.
Right. Because that wasn't about.
Well, they did because they said rock and roll is no. Long live rock and roll. That was the whole thing.
Right.
Because we want rock and roll. Rock and roll is true music.
But gays listen to rock and roll.
Exactly.
Too. So that wasn't their target. Yes.
That wasn't their push. They were literally pushing it because it became something where they attributed. That too, even to this day, when you think about YMCA and all these different songs, even today when they think about the disco era, they tag disco era with the gays, as opposed to I'm gonna go into a record right now, George McRae. We'll come right back, but this is George McRae with Rock Your Baby, and this is actually considered one of the first records to really be titled disco. Keep it locked, it's Generation X.
Sexy. disco just came out of nowhere. Really, disco. It came from R&B, came from funk. So anything that you can dance to became suddenly disco music. I really did embrace being known as a disco artist because it was one more step in the evolution of music.
Yeah, one more step in the evolution.
I think that's what I was trying to say.
That's what you were trying to say earlier. That nailed it in, huh?
Meaning that the whole disco thing, like I always looked at it as funk and soul. Uh-huh. Like I didn't. To me, it was the same thing.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, even though we call it disco, to me, it was the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, instrumentation-wise, it was like...
I feel... You know what? What I find when I listen to disco is... And what separates it is, one, the pulse.
Mm-hmm.
And then, two, the groove.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a different dance groove. Because, like, you could play, let's say, like, Flashlights... Or you know, or you could play a nice, a great funk record, and you're gonna get in. You could dance to it, but your dance is a little nastier. and when I say nasty, I'm talking about you getting into your groove. You feel it in your guts because that bass is like just driving it. Whereas when you're in disco, that pulse is driving it. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Kind of like you were saying with house. You know what I'm saying?
It's that four on the floor, that boom, boom. Boom. Yeah, that kick is on every downbeat.
It's a different step to it. You know what I'm saying? Like you want to step a little bit more into it.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think it caught a bad rap?
I think it did catch a bad rap.
Mainstream wise, yeah.
Mainstream rides caught a bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think disco would work now?
I think it still does work now.
Talk to me.
That's what I'm saying. It's still out there. You know,
in what way? Through house.
Electronic music. Mm-hmm. To me, it's if you really listen to it, the instrumentation has changed because a lot of electronic sounding music.
Yeah.
But it's still the same. And even the electronic sound was in disco. Ting, ting, ting. There was a lot of lightsabers and stuff going on in disco.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of these DJs that are big overseas, especially. That foundation is disco. You don't want to call it disco.
Right,
you know,
you have
drum and bass. You have the electronica. It's really disco.
Okay.
Repackaged.
So then if... What you gonna say?
Shout out to Blue Six.
Shout out to Blue Six.
I think a lot of... it just depends on what you listen to.
Okay.
A person's personal preference. Because I listen to a couple of artists who... I mean, it's disco music remastered, you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
It doesn't have a lot of words. It has a lot of feeling, a lot of sounds. Sometimes it's good for working in different environments with certain people. Like, if I play music, sometimes I don't want it to have a lot of words.
Yeah.
I don't want it to have, like, a lot of subject matter. I want it to just be the beat.
Yeah.
And, you know, just a couple of sounds going on, and it really puts people in a different mind frame, I think, a lot of times.
Yeah.
Especially when you want to keep people from getting, like, too hyped up or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it keeps a calm vibe going on. So I play it a lot of times, like, say if I'm doing an art therapy group or something where I want the population to be relaxed a little bit more, I do play, like, what's a new age house. Like like I said earlier, Blue Six, or if you put it in Pandora, any group that pulls up with them a lot of times just because of the way, the feeling, the vibe it gives off.
I appreciate what both of you just said. You've actually... That was therapy for me. You actually... No, really. You actually helped me today. And I really appreciate that. And the reason I say that is because, and I also see why I connect to it. Because sometimes I feel like disco does catch a bad rap, and like listening now, I feel like it's kind of faded to the back. You know what I'm saying? Or it's faded away. But then, in essence, it really is still here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I was connected to in disco was not just the rhythm; it was the lyrics.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? As a lyricist, that's probably one of those reasons. Mm-hmm. But like the lyrics and the songs, what they were singing about was actually always connected to me as well.
Yes.
So it's like that went hand in hand. And so I think what I'm missing is the rhythm and those lyrics,
and the lyrics together.
Together. You know what I'm saying? So so the disco is still here. I think I'm going to agree with you all both that the disco is still here. Yeah. I'm just missing those lyrics.
And that's what
with that with that groove. You know what I'm saying?
Because I've never been a lyric person. Yeah. I always caught the lyrics decades later.
Yeah,
that's what they were saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's always been the music grabs me at first.
Yeah, it's those the melody, what they singing, the melody and those lyrics, they always just be like, you know, like when he just does that, yeah, rock, baby. Like that feel good to me. You know what I'm saying? And so that's the part I miss. But you're right. Disco is not left. It's just evolved.
It's evolved. Yes, evolved. Just like every other genre.
Yeah.
It's kind of evolved.
Just like every other genre. Yeah. Hey, got a different opinion as of now.
But I do think when people say disco, they're specifically speaking of 70s.
That 70 time period.
That 70 time period.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a great time period. It was great. Yeah, it was great.
But when you say, R&B,
yeah.
What do you think of? See,
that's good stuff too. I think when I hear R&B though, I think 90s.
But see, that's funny.
I think Boyz II Men when I hear.
Yeah, R&B. When I hear R&B, I think 90s. I hear late 80s.
I think 80s. Like yeah. I don't think R&B is around anymore.
Yeah, and you're right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I still do. I still hear that too. But yeah,
I hear 80s. Like I think, oh, Anita Baker.
Right.
R&B, Anita Baker.
Yeah.
When no I say doubt. Today's R&B, I say her.
Ah, her.
Or Jill Scott.
Yeah. I think of that as soul.
I go soul with that. Soul with that.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I do hear soul there. But you're right. Like, they all, you know.
And that's why I said, depending on where you come from.
Yeah, they kind of.
Depending on what song they're making, too.
Or depending on where you come from. You look at song.
You said something similar to that earlier, though. What you just said. Depending on what song they're making, right? And sometimes, when you spoke about Michael, sometimes we can attribute an artist to the music that they're making. You know what I'm saying? So, like, we'll look at Mike and we'll say that's an R&B guy or a pop guy. So, when he does a disco record, it's R&B and pop R&B. Because Mike is R&B and pop.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Or like you say, with her or Jill Scott. Jill Scott can make an R&B song, but we equate her with soul.
Right.
So, she made an R&B record. Or like, it's a soul song now because Jill sang it.
That's right.
When Hootie did an R&B album and it still sounded like Hootie. But he was like, "This is an R&B album." Like,
no, it's a country song. That's a country song. Yeah.
But it's like, what made it an R&B?
Yeah,
album?
Yeah. Like, no, Hootie, you still country.
You still reaching for it.
Yeah, he still reaching.
He had the same producers as Jill Scott and everything. So it's like, what made it a country? Like, is it the twang?
Because I never knew that Justin Timberlake was R&B. I thought he was pop.
Oh, I thought he was pop. I still think he's pop.
Yeah, but it's like, that's R&B music.
He just got R&B.
He was trying.
I
can see him trying to go R&B. Yeah, and I think, was like,
and if I really listened to it, I probably would say it's R&B. But
if it wasn't him singing
it? I'm looking at him. Yeah, I'm looking at him like, yeah, like, nah, that's pop.
But at the same time, I look at Usher like I look at Justin Timberlake.
See, Usher's R&B.
But what I'm saying is,
you're right. I'm just biased.
right. Yeah, he's R&B.
Like I think that's pop too. Like to me, I like all that's McDonald's, right? Like Usher, Justin Timberlake, anything. Yeah. All that's McDonald's.
That's all McDonald's.
It's just all surface, you know.
Jill Scott is Quarter Pounder.
No, Jill Scott is Jill Scott is Whole Foods.
Whole Foods.
it's a difference.
Talk to me, man. Hey, you listen to Generation X. We'll be right back.
my bima. Who am I? The girls them sugar. How can I make love to a fella in a rush? Pass me the keys to my truck. Who am I?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's time for Who Am I on Generation X. M. Yes, it's time for this. So, I'm going to read a description of someone and you guys will chime in and listen who gets it first. First person. My name is Edward. I was born to Lillian Lynch and Charles Edward in Brooklyn, New York at age 15. I began stand-up comedy in the early 80s. At 19, I was offered a contract with Saturday Night Live. I starred in such films as 48 Hours, Beverly Hills Cop, and Golden Child. The first, all right, so, Will.
Eddie Murphy.
It is Eddie Murphy. It is our brother.
Did he hit the button early?
No.
Oh.
Actually, he didn't hit it till way late. You can hit it whenever you know.
Oh, okay. So that's why I'm sitting here like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, with my finger right here looking at Will like, what? I didn't know he had
got my
hit
hands
the button.
In my pocket.
Yeah, I was like, what did he answer?
Oh, yeah, you okay. Can as soon as you know.
Anytime. He said, just don't say nothing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Anytime you want.
Like a ninja. He moves like a ninja.
His hands in his pocket.
Yeah, that's Eddie Murphy, man. Eddie Murphy. Here it is. Number two. I began in TV in the late 50s and 60s, doing westerns such as Gunsmoke and Riverboat. However, in the 70s and 80s, I carved my name into pop culture as a sex symbol. In 1982, I starred with Dolly Parton in The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, but nothing could compare to that state-to-state chase in Smokey and the Bandit. Will, what you got?
Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds. It is Burt Reynolds. Y'all remember Burt, man?
Yes. That thick old mustache.
Wait, do you think he was a sex symbol?
No.
Not for me. Not for you? I can see how, you know, white women might like him.
I just wanted the car.
You wanted the car.
Yeah.
The car was off the chain, right?
Yeah. That was his words. Yeah, he just took on sex symbol hard, though. I guess ladies thought he was back in the day, but I don't know.
Not my type.
I didn't think so.
Wasn't my type. Cool mustache, though.
Cool mustache.
Yeah, man. That's what I
think Tom Selleck had the best mustache, though.
This is true.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? He nailed
Magnum
that.
Rapid.
He nailed that mustache to a T. I think Eddie Murphy tried to get Tom Selleck's mustache. It didn't work. He tried it.
Steve Harvey before Steve Harvey.
Yeah, Steve's really trying to rock that mustache, right?
He got no lip.
All right, this next person is one of your favorite people. I enlisted in the Navy on my 18th birthday and became one of the youngest aviators. After leaving the service and attending Yale, I got into the oil business and became a millionaire about 40. Though I had several political defeats, I was able to obtain the office of congressman, ambassador, and CIA director, ultimately sealing the deal as the 43rd vice president and 41st president of the United States of America. Keisha, you timed in first.
I am George Bush.
I am George Bush.
George H.W. Bush.
Oh, well.
Yeah. You knew who she was. Yeah. George H., that's him.
George
that's
H. Him.
I didn't see you click.
Yeah, you didn't see it. See, she got
I've
that.
I've been watching you, Will. I know you move like a ninja.
Yeah, good one. Yeah, did you know that he was an aviator?
Yep.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And CIA.
Yeah.
I didn't know that part. I knew he was CIA.
Yeah.
We thought he was a bumbling fool. All these years.
I was waiting for that part of the description. I am a bumbling fool. I am his son. See, you guys would have thought right. You would have said George W. if I'd have said a bubbling fool.
But right.
Here we go.
He was a smart one.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. Got a lot of credit after. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Here we go. Next one. My mama called me Terry Jean. I am considered the most recognized person in my occupation. During the 1980s, I had the whole game in the chokehold. Some call me Mr. America. Others, the Super Destroyer. Not only am I a 13-time world champion, but in 2005, I was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. Although I admitted being a racist to a point, I did eventually apologize for that. Will, you chimed in first. Who you got?
Listen here, brother. I won't hold it.
Yay.
Yes. Hulk Hogan. Did you accept his apology?
I didn't care.
You didn't care. Nah. Didn't even matter. Mm-mm. Did it take? Did
always
it take
assume, away? I always assume white people is racist
out the gate.
So, yeah, like,
right.
I mean, he just confirmed what I already thought.
Yeah, he just confirmed it.
I'm still a fan.
Still a fan.
We're
huh?
not gonna be kicking it, but
yeah.
You know,
probably not. Probably not.
I'm not gonna turn Never. Off. Yeah. I'm not gonna turn off Rocky 3.
Yeah, you. If I feel like if you got rid of all your friends that was racist,
we ain't gonna have no friends.
You ain't gonna have no friends. You know what I'm saying? We're black or white or any other race.
No,
you know what I'm saying?
No.
Straight up. All right, here we go. Here's our last person for the day. I worked in a funeral parlor and as a bricklayer while taking small parts on Broadway. I've been a burglar, a computer analyst, a bartender, and a nun. But my Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony Award put me in a rare class of entertainers, and I love the view from here. I see Will chimed in first.
No!
He got you. Oh, yeah, he got you. You gonna be nice and let her get it?
I was gonna say her real name. I forgot it.
You forgot it?
Whoopee.
You know her real name?
Carmen Karen.
Karen it is.
Oh,
Karen.
Oh, man. No, I did not remember her real name.
Yeah, it is. Whoopi Goldberg.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, all right.
Yes, I love the fact that she's an EGOT winner. And
she's dope.
She's
mm-hmm.
dominating.
Mm-hmm.
She's just dominating
everything.
I remember the first time I ever saw her actually was when she did the Mom's Mabley special.
Uh-huh.
I think it was
recent,
HBO.
Though. That was recent.
No. Was it? Well, at least I think that's what she was. I thought she was portraying that. This was I'm talking about way back in the '80s.
Oh,
it was
her first one woman stage
stand up.
That's when she did the characters.
Yeah. Maybe Moms was one of the characters in there because I remember her doing all these different characters.
Yeah.
You're right.
She did the Moms Mabley documentary recently.
That was later.
Yeah.
I think she did Moms in that set though.
Okay.
But she was. I just remember her and her costume mm-hmm. and the way she. I was
all
like,
different characters.
Who is she? And then I saw this movie called Telephone.
Jumper Jack Flash.
You saw Jumper Jack. Yeah, that was dope.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember when she did Telephone, mm-hmm. and it was just her in that whole movie.
I don't think I've seen it.
It was like one, I think there was people at the door. There was somebody that you could hear through the wall. But on the set, other than at the very end, the whole thing was Whoopi on this phone. She was having this phone call.
Mm.
And she carries this whole movie. Remember Tom Hanks did it in Castaway.
Yeah.
Right,
just him, right?
But to be able to carry a full film
and keep you
with just you,
and keep you engaged,
that's a lot of work.
Is and you're engaged the whole time, like she's that dope.
Oh yeah, she's
and I'm
dope.
Like, oh wow. And then the end of that movie. So I don't want to give it away. If you haven't seen it, go watch Telephone. Pull it up. It's somewhere you can find it. But the end of it is like one of them. It's like, yeah, she nailed that. I think that is my favorite. One of my favorite movies, period.
I remember when she did, what was it, Made in America with Will
Smith? Yeah, with Ted. Was that with Ted
Danson? Ted Danson, Will Smith.
Yeah, that was here.
Long, yeah.
That was in Oakland.
Because I was going, they filmed it. I was at Willard Junior. I was in junior high school. And they filmed it. They were going down college.
Okay.
And so I remember her riding her bike down the street.
Yeah,
because
her
store was right there on the corner, right? If you drive up Ashby and make a right,
yeah,
it's right there on the corner. So my school was right there.
Yeah.
So I remember us seeing her filming that, riding her bike down the street.
Yeah.
During that time,
I remember my
sister. And her daughter was out there all the time too.
My sister was in one of those graduating people.
Oh, when
extras.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
When they was in tech, because
over tech. Yeah.
Isn't Ted Danson and Whoopi Goldberg? Don't they have a child together?
I didn't know they had a child.
No, they don't have a child.
They don't have a child. I know they dated.
They dated.
But I didn't know they
she
had
a child. She has a child with another, things like an executive or something.
Okay.
But her daughter's like 45, 40.
Yeah, she's mm-hmm. always been really outspoken about her, too. And she loves her.
That's mm-hmm. She had her young. She had her when she was like 16.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that would have been before 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. No doubt. Whoopi Goldberg it is. All right, keep it locked. It's Generation X.
the new kid in town, and the music's on his side.
Let's dance!
Footloose.
I think Mr. McCormick has a right to be heard.
I just wanted to say a few words about this motion. From the oldest of times, people danced for a number of reasons. They danced in prayer and show their community spirit. And they danced to celebrate. That is the dancing that we're talking about. And what did David do? What did David do? What did David do? David danced. Leaping and dancing. See, this is our time to dance.
Which way is your left? Huh? Willer, which way is your left? He don't know his left foot from his right foot.
I'll tell you something, man. If I gotta get up in front of that council, then you are gonna learn how to dance.
Paramount Pictures presents Footloose.
Footloose is Generation X. What's happening, man? Hey, leaping and dancing before the Lord.
I will dance really? Like David did.
Right. You think that? I feel like that. I don't know if that would have worked. But anyway.
You don't think Jesus was doing a lambada?
Yeah, I just don't know if that would have convinced somebody. But Footloose, man. Cult classic. Mm-hmm. Kevin Bacon.
Hated it.
Oh. Did you? Oh God! What? Why? Okay, I gotta come back from that. Why'd you hate it?
You know what's funny?
What's up?
This further lets me know that white people have
you are just biased as biased can go.
White people get so bored with life that they will create a problem out of anything.
Out of anything, they say they will create a problem.
No dancing.
Was this Footloose based on something real though?
Yeah, because white people probably was bored somewhere. Like, you know what? No more dancing. Because I get a stiffy every time she dances on me. I'm going to ban it for the whole town.
And the Bible thumping was pretty big back then, I think. Big. So it was like,
big.
You know,
it's still big.
It's evil. Yeah. You know, you can't do that. Yeah. Even though everyone's populating and having babies and getting married and things like that.
It's
still
all about a dude getting a stiffy. If I get a stiffy, it's no good.
Yeah, he said it.
That's what it's all about.
So did you like the movie, Keisha?
I didn't think it was a bad movie. Again, the time period. Mm-hmm. This movie lets me reflect back on a time period where things weren't so raunchy and disgusting. Body parts weren't so exposed. I don't have a problem with my kids watching a movie like this because it is something that's more PG-13.
Yeah.
And just the time period in general, just everybody was different mentally.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Things were about feeling good. The movies, whether it was black or white, were informative. They always had like a public service announcement that went along with them.
Yeah.
And they encouraged you to do what's right.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah. I dig it. It's one of those things where it's like Kevin Bacon, who almost didn't even get the role at first.
He's an underrated actor.
Yeah, he is an underrated actor, man. Mm-hmm. Kevin Bacon, like, he's so underrated that they have a game called Six Degrees to Kevin Bacon, mm-hmm. right?
What?
He's got that many movies to where you can actually get to a Kevin Bacon movie starting at any movie in six steps within six movies. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to play that one day. But, or something like it, like maybe six steps to Whoopi. But, but anyway, he was in so many movies during that time that I feel like it was him that made the movie, even though he almost didn't get the movie part.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I thought he was pretty dynamic in what otherwise could have been a pretty boring movie, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Because it was about nothing, really.
The movie, I agree with you in the sense of the movie really, I mean, I guess there was a moral to it. It was really not a dynamic movie, but Kevin Bacon was such a dynamic actor.
Mm-hmm. He made it.
That he made that movie a classic. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And like, if it comes on now, I watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't watch it. Mm-mm. Yeah, if it comes on, I watch it. If I'm flipping through the channels and I see that movie, I'm like, you know, I'm about to watch this.
It's something about
him. Chris Penn was great too.
It's something about him dancing in the barn.
When he's dancing in the barn, him and Chris Penn.
And he was mad.
No, he was about when he was mad.
Oh, when he had his flash dance moment.
Oh, my God.
When he was smoking a cigarette.
Did you see him pushing himself? He was feeling that, wasn't he?
And then he Tarzan across.
Yeah, man. And, I don't know, man.
That was so 80s.
It was.
It was a straight flash
dance. Now that you couldn't do today.
No. Not as a man.
You ain't.
Don't be a man doing that.
You ain't Tarzan. In the cross,
not if you want to take us.
It was a terrible dance scene, right?
Not if you want us to take you seriously. Don't
right.
do that.
Don't do that. Don't do that.
What I don't know is, was it taken serious back then
when it came out? Man. It was like, man, he rocking right now. He getting it, man.
The soundtrack was dope, though.
Oh, yeah. I love the soundtrack. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love the soundtrack.
It was a super dope soundtrack.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Kenny Loggins, Denise Williams.
Super. No, what was my jam? The hero song. What was that song?
Tina Turner.
No, not that song. Oh. Drawing a blank. But yeah, the soundtrack was clean. But you know, that movie it was very cliche-ish. It was very they beat the system.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. You know. Now, to a degree, that's actually something I do like to see that happen in movies.
Everybody kind of came to their senses at the end, like, this is stupid.
Yeah. I just really liked, I really, like I said, the movie in itself, I think was usually I don't say this about too many cult classics, because I liked most of them. But I think the movie actually was a poorly written movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was boring. In the if anybody else would have played that part, it probably would have just went to shambles.
He made it. He made it believable.
But Kevin Bacon brought that movie out, and I think and Chris Penn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rest in peace, Chris Penn. But those two, their dynamic, the way Chris couldn't dance, the way Kevin had to teach
him, and even when he taught him, he still couldn't dance.
He still couldn't dance, but he manned about it.
Exactly.
He manned it up. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He manned it up. So
he did it very manly.
Yeah. So, any other words on Footloose?
Like the dudes. The cold part about that movie was Home Chick kept getting her ass beat. Like her daddy slapped the shit.
Is the daddy gonna step in after the boyfriend beats her up at all?
Wait, the daddy slapped the shit out of her. Yeah, the boyfriend, and then I'm like, why didn't Kevin go up his ass?
Right, I was
like, it just left it alone. You know what I'm saying?
That's a good point.
That shows you the difference in the times.
It was almost, that movie would not have. I don't know if that would have been okay. Now.
It was almost like they were okay with her ass getting beat. Because they were almost saying...
Well, they didn't address it.
But they were almost saying you deserved it.
Right. But you knew she came home with black eyes and marks on her face.
Right. But what I'm saying is they were okay with it. Like, you did something wrong.
Because she was doing something
wrong. What did you do to him? Uh-huh. What did you do to him?
No. Exactly. It was like, what you did something wrong.
What did you do wrong? Mm-hmm. Right. No, I got you. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, that's a valid point to look at it from that perspective, too. Like,
it wasn't even addressed. Itself.
Yeah, they didn't even address it.
And for her father to be so prominent
but her father
in the community, he didn't...
But he beat her ass too.
But that goes back to being, well, I think we were off here. I don't know when we talked about just the being the Bible thumper. Somebody said Bible thumper.
Oh yeah,
you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it was this. It was this. We talked about that period.
Yes,
that time period. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, and it was
submissive.
Like he was so.
Yeah, if you got beat by your husband, you went back home and you dealt with it.
Dude beat the shit out of her and said, "I've treated you decent." Right. He didn't say I treated you good. He said I treated you decent.
That's right.
And then left her ass sitting there
in the dirt.
And then she went to Kevin Bacon. She's like, "I'm sorry you have to see me this way."
You know what? I just had a different perspective. I actually believe that Kevin. Now, actually, that movie just got deeper. The movie just got deeper right here on air. See, that's why we do this. That's why we do this show, to reflect on something. That movie just got deep. Because actually, now when you go back to Kevin Bacon's line about leaping and dancing, that movie, see, that, I've never watched it that deep before because it was never really a deep movie to me. But it actually has some depth to it because Kevin Bacon was explaining how much you guys are not reading what you're reading. And that's what we just talked about earlier today. That's what was off air.
Right.
Yeah.
When we was talking about people are not reading the scriptures for what the scriptures say.
They just listen to
home
dude. They
just go into this religion.
And they just and listen
boom,
to what...
Here's a this
and listen to the part that they think pertains to them.
No, but look.
Exactly.
But they're
that's
on,
it.
No, right. not only that. They're only listening to what he's telling them.
What he's telling them.
Right.
They're not
reading. They're being fed. Their religion.
And so when he sat up there and actually read the Bible, he was like, we're going to dance like David. It messed him up.
What
it
better did. Station it to did. Bring out the validity of Footloose than KC? You know what I'm saying? That's exactly the type of movie we promote. Straight up.
Because he was like, wait, hold up. Y'all been coming at me. Yeah. I actually read this thing. This thing said, David said, I danced.
That's right.
Yeah, he took their words and used it.
He said, what did David do?
What did David do? That's what he said.
What did David do? David danced. Wait a minute, y'all tell me how to dance.
That's right.
This is what you read
every week.
It's in
the Bible.
There it is. There's the classic behind that movie. It was actually about...
Which is why people are leaving the church, because people are reading differently than what they're hearing.
Some are leaving the church, but then some are leaving the following of religion.
The religion,
right.
Period.
Yeah.
You
know what I'm saying? They're not leaving their spirituality.
Because the church itself is actually what you're supposed to be creating.
Right.
Yeah.
The church is not a building.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
what I'm saying? The church is actually the body.
They're leaving the congregation.
Right.
Because
they're leaving
saying,
that building as being considered the church and recognizing what the church should be.
Really is.
You know what I'm
That's
saying?
Right.
What it really is. Oh, man. So now I'm glad that I said I liked Footloose. I'd have been mad if I said I didn't like it.
Right.
I still don't like it. It's that dance scene.
So much better writing.
That one dance scene.
That one dance scene.
Well, he did the shoulder and everything.
Himself off the walls.
Now I got to take it back. I said it was terrible writing. That was great writing. That was amazing. Amazing writing. Footloose was an amazing movie.
You know why I hated that dance?
I'm so biased.
You know why I hated that dance scene?
Because
I was watching it. I couldn't turn away.
Oh man.
Give it up for Footloose, man. Yeah. It's Generation X. Keep it alive. Denise Williams, let's hear it for the boys. Let's hear it for the boys. What's happening? It's Generation X. It's time to get out of here, man. Any last words?
Hershey's.
Snack mix.
That's it.
Just Hershey's?
Just Hershey's. I don't
have it. Can't follow that, huh?
I can't follow that.
Can't follow that.
What am I going to come up with? Yeah. Tell the children the truth.
Tell the children the truth.
Oh, that needs to be a t-shirt.
Yeah. No, I don't think I can follow that.
That needs to be a t-shirt. Yeah. Any last words? Tell the children the truth.
I love it.
Oh, that's got to be a t-shirt.
Man, I'm going to leave it on that. I'm not going after that, man.
Oh, damn.
I'm
done.
I'm
retired.
I am done. Until next time, man. Generation X, tell the children the truth.
Peace.
Side.